he's coming?
I don't know.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly Lunch and Learn. This week is Parshat Va'era, which you can find on page 318 in your Chumashim. 318. You were there exactly, but for 100 pages. Missed it by that much. No. All right, so we are going to focus today on four words, or five words, that you are probably familiar with from the Pesach Seder. And we're going to be seeing the understanding, interpretation of these words from Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the Netziv. We have talked about before some biographical information about the Netziv. He was born in 1816 in Mir, Russia, and died in 1893 in Warsaw, Poland. He is known as the Netziv. That's the abbreviation of his name. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of the famed Volozhiner Yeshiva. Volozhiner Yeshiva, he wrote many, many books, and he is very well known for his commentary on the Chumash. And we are going to learn part of his commentary. We'll have the privilege of learning part of his commentary on the Chumash today. Let's first look at the psukim, at the verses that he's dealing with, and then we'll specifically look at this, the words that we're going to focus on. So we are at the point where Moshe has already began his diplomatic mission with Moshe, with Paro, trying to convince Paro to let the Jews free. And his first attempt is met with utter failure, right? He tries to get Paro to let the Jews go, as he says, for 3 days in the desert, to sacrifice to God. And Paro says, well, if you think you have time to take off 3 days to sacrifice to God, you must not be very busy. You must have too much time on your hands. So now I'm going to make your work harder. I am going to request that you we're not going to give you the straw anymore. And you have to go get your own straw from now on. Okay, so the Jewish people the Jewish people complain to Moshe and they say, you made it worse for us. At the end of last chapter, you made it worse for us. Not only do we have to get our own straw, but now they are not even lessening the burden on us, right? We have to make the same number of bricks that we were making in the past. But in the past, the Egyptians would provide the straw, and now we have to provide the straw ourselves, okay? So he's failing. And that's where we pick up in the beginning of this week's Parsha. Okay? So, page 318, God comes to reassure Moshe. Vayedaber Elokim el Moshe, vayomer elav ani Hashem. God comes to Moshe and says, I am God. Hold on 1 second, please. Okay, so Moshe comes to reassure Moshe that everything's going to be okay, and he makes him the following promise. He says, "Va'eral Avraham leYitzchak leYaakov el Shaddai Shmi Hashem lo nodati lahem. I appear to Abraham, to Isaac, and Jacob as El Shaddai, but with my name Hashem, I did not make myself known to them. Vigam hakimoti et briti itam latet lahem et eretz kenan et eretz migurehem asher garuba. Moreover, I established my covenant with them to give them the land of the Canaan, the land of their sojourning. And I've heard the moaning. And therefore, he says in verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Lachain, Emor Livnei Yisrael. Therefore, tell the Jewish people, Ani Hashem, I am God. Votseti etchem mitachat zivlot Mitzrayim. And I shall take you from under the burdens of Egypt. Vihitzalti etchem me'avodatam. And I shall rescue you from your service, from their service. Vigaalti etchem bizro netuya. And I shall redeem you with an outstretched arm, uvishvatim gedolim, and with great judgments. Vilakachti etchem li la'am. I shall take you to me for a people. Vayiti lachem le'elohim. And I shall be a God for you. Viadatem ki ani Hashem elokechem, hamotzi etchem mitachat zivlot Mitzrayim. And you shall know that I am Hashem your God, who takes you out from under the burdens of Egypt. What we have just read are very famous psukim, because they include, right, what we call the Arba Lishonot Shel Geula. Exactly, the four languages of redemption. Just to review what they are, starting in Pasuk 6, the first one is V'hotzeti, which is translated as I will take you out. Then V'hitzalti, which is translated, I shall rescue you. Vigaalti, I shall redeem you. And vilakachti, and I shall take you to me as a people. Those are what we call in rabbinic lingo, the Arba Lishonot Shel Geula, the four languages of redemption. The Talmud Yerushalmi actually calls them the Arba Geulot, the four redemptions, because the one question you may ask is, why do we need four words for the same thing? Right? If it's all redemption, why do we need four words for the same thing? So that's why the Talmud Yerushalmi says they are Arba Geulot. They are not the same thing. They're actually four different redemptions. We're going to see stages of redemption. This is also why, according to our tradition, right, we drink four cups of wine. Right? Four cups of wine, each one to represent or to correspond with one of the four languages of redemption. Which an interesting question, which is not the topic for us to discuss, but I leave it to you to talk about, is, okay, we have four languages of redemption. That's nice. Why do they have to be remembered at the Seder with four cups of wine? You could have done four matzahs instead of three matzahs, or four additional matzahs. You could have done four pieces of meat, right? Why specifically did it have to be four cups of wine? It's an interesting question to consider.
Because wine has its own flavor. Yain has this a lot of meaning.
It's ceremonial.
It's flowing. It's yain yesamach levav enosh. Shenichnas yain yatzaso. Yain has so many.
True. I could have thought water would have been a good idea, because water is about life, right? And the redemption is about giving us life. So maybe it should have been four cups of water. Well, thinking about it now, there is a ritual in Judaism that requires water. Of course, that's the mikveh.
But we do washing.
So, right. So then we could have used something else for this. We could have made kiddush and had something else for the four cups of wine. Right. All right. Anyway, like I said, this is not what we're talking about today. So you guys could now you have something to talk about at your Seder. Take a note. And you can talk about the Seder. What I want to do is look at the four languages of Geula and understand them according to the Netziv. Okay? Because the Netziv has a very interesting explanation. As I mentioned, the Talmud Yerushalmi says that these are not four languages of redemption, but they are four Geulot. They're actually four separate redemptions. The Netziv, as Shula said, sees it a little bit differently and doesn't see it as four different redemptions, but sees it as four stages of redemption. And so what we have to then think about as we're going through these stages is, why do we need four stages of redemption, right? Why not just leave? Because we're going to see that each of these stages of redemption represents a diminishment in the level of enslavement that the Jews were experiencing in Egypt. And an interesting question to think about is, why didn't God just say, okay, we're leaving now?
To give a chance to...
Right? We're leaving now, and we don't have to stick around for how long the plagues, the Makot took. And there are good answers to that. One good answer to that is because God wanted to punish the Egyptians. So you needed those 10 Makot, those 10 plagues. Those 10 plagues were not for the Jews. You could argue that they were, but you could also argue that they were to punish the Egyptians. And maybe that's why they had to stay around. But it is a good question to ask, why do we need these stages? And the Netziv is going to answer that question. Yes. Okay, right, good.
What did you say?
Okay, so that's a good, it's interesting, and then I have a follow-up question. I'll repeat it. That is, if you're going to try to achieve a goal, right, you can't do it cold turkey, I think that's the term, right? You have to try to build up to it. So I think that's an excellent answer, but what's the goal here?
They appreciate more.
The goal is, you're saying the goal is to bring them to Eretz Israel. Hold on 1 second. Go ahead. Is that the goal here? Is that the goal here? V'hotzeiti, v'itzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti. What's he trying to do in stages? Okay, so that's my question. Does that require stages or just leave? So you're saying it's a mindset. We're not talking about the physical slavery, it's the sort of emotional slavery. Okay, good. We're gonna touch on that. We're gonna go around once and then we're gonna come back. The Netziv is the last online. Yes.
I just think that God was referring that this is what I'm gonna do, and you don't just get out and go la la la. You're going to have to be...
Right, but why not? That's the question. Of course that's what he's going to do. That's what it says. But why not?
Because
why not just take them out? I'll ask you a question.
To live by rules.
Let's say you're a slave. And someone says to you, I will either grant you your freedom right now or in a year from now. And in a year from now, there's a good chance you'll be more mentally prepared for slavery. But until then, you're going to suffer. I think most people would say, take me out now. I'll take my chances. So I think that's on our mind. Yes, Charlie.
They don't know what they have. And I say that because if they were enslaved for so long, that's why they wandered in the desert. Because they didn't know what they had. They weren't ready.
Okay.
Because a lot of them wanted to go back.
Good. So good. Excellent. Oh, yes. But remember, at this point, we're focusing on what B'nai Yisrael were thinking and whether they knew or didn't know what they were getting. But in this case, so how does this help that? How does doing this in stages help that?
Well, because they will realize this really is a chef. He really will take care of us because look what he's doing to the Egyptians. He's doing all these bad things in stages to the Egyptians. Therefore, he probably will do a lot of good things for us if we are his nation.
Oh, okay. So the reason why he couldn't take them out of Egypt right away was that God wanted the Jews to see the plagues, which would give the Jews faith.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay. Yes. Eddie.
I think you said that, but I don't think it was for the Jews, for the Hebrews. It was for the future generations to remember. If this was one thing that just happened real quick and was done, it would have been remembered the same way.
Okay. Although you could make the argument that if God took them out in the blaze of glory, that also would have been remembered. Okay. Someone online said, Sandra Morgan, hi Sandra, she said she sees it as birth. They were to be born new people free, one people with laws and God. And as birth comes out in stages and pains. Okay, I like that. Yeah.
Well, think of it actually in a, I think it can be taken literally in a physical sense, and or also taken in stages of psychological development as well.
Right.
And it's kind of similar to what everyone else has been comparing.
Right. Okay, excellent. All right, we're coming down to the last three. Yeah. Okay, excellent. Excellent, okay.
Maybe.
Zach?
When you talk about a tshuva, tshuva also comes to the stages. And this is a direct parallel thinking. Tshuva and redemption from Mitzrayim, they are identical. Another thing that I want to point out, I probably have the biggest advantage among people who speak over there to understand what does it mean to be a slave.
Right.
Because I was freed physically from Soviet Union, and each of you probably remember late 70s and 80s rally for Soviet Jewry. It was not enough. It's like for me, when I see it in parallel, Moshe Rabbeinu conversation with Paro, exactly what would be American Jewish community talking about freeing Soviet Jews. And then we really could experience, because as you know, that we lived in the 70s and 80s, and we could follow up what's happened to those Jews who were freed and where they today. I can see so
wow.
much
okay.
physical reflection of
that's thank you. That's very powerful. Okay, yes.
If you just handed something, you don't appreciate it. But if you got, if things come to you in a stage, like from you it's more or less not earning it, but you're learning that, hey, this isn't easy to get.
Okay, good, excellent. Okay, good, Marilyn.
Okay. I agree with Ron, but I also think if you've been a slave and all of a sudden you have all this freedom, like you have choices, you don't know what to do.
Okay.
Maybe it was better, you know, someone told me what to do. I can't handle all these choices, so maybe you
okay.
have to do it in
stages. All right, good. Okay, last word.
These four words of ve'otzeti ve'itzarti ve'galti ve'lakachti, in de'lakachti it says ve'lakachti etchem li le'am.
Right.
So I have the feeling that it goes up in the level.
Okay.
It's like the light goes up. Lakachti etchem li le'am, it means
it's
I am going, in the beginning it's physical. I will save you, I will redeem you, but lakachti etchem li le'am, I will form a nation. So it's like, I will lead you. I will take you hand by hand like a mother takes her child,
okay.
and I will lead you to be formed as a nation.
Okay, great.
Maybe.
All these are excellent answers. Some of them along the lines of the Netziv. So let's learn what he had to say. Great. So the Netziv sees this not at all in physical terms. He is not looking at this in physical terms. He sees this as a spiritual journey. Okay? Because the end of V'lakachti etchem li la'am takes place elsewhere. The last of the four languages, which is in the first word of verse 7 of Pasuk Zayin, V'lakachti etchem li la'am, does not take place in Egypt, but takes place at Sinai. Okay? So, and we'll see his comments there, but based on that, we could gain a better understanding of why the stages were necessary. So let me read you a little bit of what the Netziv says along these lines. He says, "Muskal pashut hu she'i efshar letzayer she'yehi ish hamoni shuke'eved kenani omed ba'avdut chomer ulevenim." It's impossible, he says, to imagine or to think that a person who is mired in physical labor, chomer ulevenim, the cement and the bricks, ve'ala b'meshech mu'at, and in a short amount of time, is elevated to be an Israelite, again, talking about Sinai, Ro'ui la'mod b'mamad har Sinai l'kabel ha-Torah b'mora gadol shel gilui shechina. That the person, such a person will be able to stand at Sinai to receive the Torah with great awe and with gilui shechina. That's the key. Gilui shechina is the presence of God, where God makes himself manifest. He says that is not something that happens automatically, right? What the Netziv here is teaching us is something. He's using the Exodus from Egypt to teach us a very important spiritual concept, which is one cannot assume or expect to reach spiritual heights just like flicking a switch. Right? It takes time. It takes work. It takes preparation. We have this all over Judaism. Right? The height of prayer in Judaism is the Amida, the Shemona Esrei. But that's a small part of prayer. We spend a half hour before the Amida every morning, essentially just getting ready for the Amida. Right? That's what Psukei Dezimra is, right? The Psalms that we say in the morning, the Hallelujahs and all, and the Ashrei, that's just getting us ready. Right? The Talmud says, Chasidim HaRishonim, the early pious ones. It doesn't mean like the old European Chasidim that we talk about from Europe, the early pious ones, they would wait an hour before. They would contemplate and meditate for a full hour before praying. Sometimes we think meditation is praying, but what they're telling us is they would meditate for an hour to try to, I guess, clear their mind or get themselves ready, a full hour before they would even say the Amida. Right? So those are just two examples of this idea in Judaism, that it's not turned on or turned off. But Al Kain, he continues, Nidrash laha'alot dato v'tzalmo shel adam la'at la'at. Therefore, the person's dot, their understanding and their tzela, maybe this is talking more of a spiritual connection to God, has to be elevated slowly, la'at la'at. V'kach haya b'Yisrael. That's true about all people, and it's certainly true about the Jews at that point. They were totally gashmi. Gashmi is physical. Because they were in physical labor all the time. And we just saw, Paros thought they had some extra free time. He took it away from them. He didn't want to give them any time to have any ability to contemplate, any ability to think. He just wanted to keep them busy, because when you're busy, you don't have time to think about how you're going to escape or other things that you can do, right? It's a tactic. That this was a tactic of Paro. V'ditalu b'meshach mu'at ad shehigiu lahar Sinai. And slowly but surely, they developed until they got to Har Sinai. So that's the Netziv's first point. And that is a really key point in understanding the story, why it took a long time. But also, more importantly, I think from our perspective, understanding how one builds a spiritual life, right? One builds a spiritual life slowly, in stages, and sometimes people come to synagogue and they're all there, they are frustrated. Came to shul and I didn't feel anything. Okay, you came to shul once, you didn't feel anything. Come to shul again and again and again, right? I've said before, I think people make a mistake that people feel that they are spiritually, when they're spiritually moved, they'll come to shul. And I think that's the wrong approach. Prayer is the opposite way around. It's if prayer, you come to shul so that you will be inspired. If you wait to be inspired to come to shul, most people won't come. You come to shul to be inspired, but that doesn't happen in a flash, right? That requires effort and a real investment in time. I sometimes say that Judaism is a religion for adults. Right, we like to think about it, it's so kid-friendly and manishtana, and we have the kids, we're so focused on kids. That's true. But really, deep Judaism is for adults who understand, hopefully adults are the ones who understand, that life is not instant gratification and that it takes time. Yes, Shula?
Is that why those four stages the time it took to go through it is to fill the 40 years in the Midbar.
Well, it didn't take them 40 years to get the Torah, so I'm not sure. You're saying 10 years per language? I'm not sure. All right, let's learn the. Let me keep reading the Netziv, okay? Then he talks about the stages. So the first language is in Pasuk Vav, verse 6. And I will take you out from under the burdens of Egypt. Shu esek chomer ulvenim sheyatzu mizeh misha shegiu lemakat arov. Right? So, if you remember, the Haggadah breaks up the Makot into three sections. Ditzach, Adash, Be'achav, which the Netziv explains, are all these stages. So after Arov, the Jews were no longer enslaved in the heavy labor. Okay? And he's able to prove that through the reading of some of the verses, which we're not going to get into. But the first stage was just freeing them from that really, really heavy burden of labor, the back-breaking labor. But they were still under Paro's power. They were still enslaved. La'avdut, mishubadim la'avdut, ad she'egiyu l'makat barad, shazachel lehokir et Yisrael. Only up until then, at Barad, hell, right? That's when Paro finally recognized them as Yisrael, as a separate nation. And this is so interesting, because the Netziv points out that if you look at the psukim from that point on, Paro starts talking about Bnei Yisrael by name instead of Ha'am, the nation. Up until that point, they were just the nation. They had no identity of who they were. They were just the nation. And after Barad, Paro's grip is loosening even more. Now he recognizes that they're their own nation. Once you recognize your own nation, then you have your own identity, you have your own destiny, you have your own goals, you have your own desires. Okay? So the first is they're no longer engaged in that heart, that back-breaking labor. Then, but they're still under Paro's control. But then, after that, Paro realizes that they are their own nation. Okay? But they still live in Egypt. Right? So therefore, they're still under the rule of Egypt. And then, after Makat Bichorot, right? After the slaying of the firstborn, that's when Vigaalti kicks in. That's redemption. That's when they actually leave, right? So they are an independent nation, obviously no longer engaged in the back-breaking slavery, and they're no longer even under Paro's. They're not even a separate nation that's living within Egypt. They are now out on their own in the desert, right? The desert represents no man's land. No one's in charge except for God. So they're able to now begin forging their own identity. So slowly but surely, they move away from the back-breaking labor, which gives them an opportunity to start contemplating and thinking. But they're still slaves. And then they begin to, Paro sees them, maybe they begin to see themselves as their own nation with their own unique future ahead of them. And then finally they are free and able to actually start marching towards their destiny. These three first stages are in Egypt. Then comes the fourth stage. Okay? The fourth stage is, we said, Vehotseti, Vitzalti, Vigalti, and then comes Vilakachti. Okay? Vilakachti is when they come to Har Sinai, right? And they are their own
Torah.
They're their own now. That not only their own nation, so they're politically free. Now they have a destiny. They have a document, right? They have rules. They have laws that set them apart from everyone else. But that wouldn't have been possible had they not gone through the slow spiritual or emotional separation from Egypt. The Netziv is arguing, maybe he's right, is that had God brought them directly to Har Sinai, they would have said, "One second, who are we? Are we still slaves? Right? Are we still part of Egypt? Is this temporary? What is this? right? And so, but he argues that by doing this slowly and by slowly limiting or diminishing Paro's handle on them, when they got to Har Sinai, they were totally free. Eddie. Right. It wasn't, you could argue that it wasn't 100% successful. Yes. They also built the golden calf. Right. We are not done with the Geula. We are not done. Before we get to Heveti, we have to do the Yadatem. Right? This is the a fifth language, which does not appear in the Haggadah, but the Netziv says is very important. Okay? This is in verse 7, Biyadatem ki ani Hashem Elokecha, and you shall know that I am Hashem, your God. The Netziv does something very interesting here. Because the question is, what's left? Why is there another stage, besides going to Eretz Yisrael? But in the desert, why is there another stage after getting the at Har Sinai? But they got that. Vilakachti, right? God gave us the Torah. That's Vilakachti. What's next? Well, why is something else necessary? Why? Let's remember what happened at Har Sinai. Right? At Har Sinai, they said, Na'aseh v'nishma. Right? They said, we will do and we'll listen. They got to Har Sinai. God appeared. As Eddie said, he appeared so clearly that they couldn't take it anymore, right? They saw things that which were unimaginable. God revealed himself and revealed his will for the first time to a group of people. Up until now, it was just really to Moshe. Now, for the first time, God revealed himself to a group of people, but there's something else.
The four times Hashem only gives. The fifth time is they acknowledge it.
Okay, so the Netziv. The Netziv says something a little different. I like what you're saying, but he says something different. He says, "V'yadatem ki ani Hashem, you will know that I am God." Hu haftacha acheret. This is a different promise. V'lashon chamishi shel ma'ale. This is a fifth language of ascending. Shekol kach ta'alu bidat ad shetagiu lemadrega shel v'yadatem. Hainu devekut v'dat Elokim. It's one thing to get the Torah, but now they're going to attach themselves and really know God. V'hadavar muvan sheyehe bizman meuchar mimadrega hakodemet. It's going to come later, right? Votzeti v'tzalti v'gaalti happened in real time. This, we're not sure when this is going to happen. There's going to be some time in the future, right? Along the same theme. There's going to be some time in the future where you are going to even have a deeper understanding of God, right? V'adavar muvan sheyeh bizman meuchar mimadrega hakodemet kimo halashanot hakodmim shelo hayu gam kein b'sha'achat ele bazeh achar zeh. They were in stages, and this one's also going to be in stages. V'yazeh mishat matan Torah ve'elech. And it's going to later, and then the Netziv adds one other point. Okay? Says, of course. So he's. I like this idea as another spiritual idea, because what the Netziv is saying is that after you think you've hit your spiritual high, there could be another one. Don't get satisfied and rest on your laurels. You think you've right. You like I said, you're at Har Sinai. What else could there possibly be? Something. It's hard to define, but it's something besides the entire Israel. There's some spiritual attainment that you can get. The Netziv, however, throws a little cold water on it. Okay? He says, V'ra'oi ladat, sh'avtachazo, ein ha'perush sheyihyeh kol Yisrael bazeh b'china. He says, it's not the case that everybody gets to v'yadatem. Right? It's not the case that everyone gets to v'yadatem. D'zeh i'efshar. Shinaheg Uma shel kol on sheha yihiyu mishukaim bidat elokim el ha perush sheyebachem harbe anshe ma'ale. So I think the first point. I think the first point is nice. That just when one has thought we've hit our spiritual high, we could do more. But then he says, when it comes to this level of the Yadatem, not everyone. I think he's saying it practically and realistically. Realistically, it's not the case that everyone reaches the level of nevuah, of prophecy, or reaches this high level of spirituality. Not everything is for everybody. There are certain things that certain people could attain and other people may not be able to attain. And also practically, it's hard to have a nation if everyone is, it's hard to practically get much done. Right, it's hard to imagine if it's hard to build a state, a country, anything if everyone's a Luftmensch, right? If everyone has their heads in the clouds, you need some people who are a little more right. But I still like this idea that after Har Sinai, there's still something that we could attain, even though we may have thought we've reached our heights. Yes. Leora.
After that fact, you did that event. So that's also a little bit of a further step.
Correct. Right. Correct. Right. Right. Veheveti is what people call the fifth language of Geula. And according to some traditions, you don't have four cups of wine at the Seder. You have five cups of wine at the Seder. Right? We split them up a little differently so you could fit them all in. And the fifth one is for Veheveti.
I thought Veheveti is Eliyahu HaNavi cup.
No, Veheveti. Oh, well, some say it's Eliyahu HaNavi cup, but some say it's a cup that you drink, just like the other four. We don't drink the Eliyahu HaNavi cup. Okay?
The more the merrier.
Okay. Did you have a comment?
Well, I think I didn't quite understand the Hebrew, but I think Donna was saying the same thing, that the fifth cup could be because Eliyahu.
Right.
And the fifth stage is...
Well, the fifth stage, Veheveti etchem el haaretz. In the psukim, the fifth stage is not Messiah, the Mashiach. In the psukim, the fifth stage is very clear. It's verse 8. Veheveti etchem el haaretz, asher nasati et yadi latei total avim tzach liyakov. I will bring you to the land that I raised my hand to give it. It's not messianic. Maybe the Kos Eliyahu is messianic, but this fifth cup is a very practical cup. It's
Didn't
about
they
going
have a fifth cup
into
for
Eretz
the Russian
Yisrael.
At one point, yes,
so once,
that.
So that, that's all. That's a much later addition. But once there's a room for a fifth cup, some people dedicated to this or dedicated to that.
Also, this veveti is aliyah in darga. It's up in the level because the goal was to come to Eretz Israel and to
right.
and to keep all. It's connected. Ve'yadatem et Hashem. You will know your God.
Right.
You'll know the Torah. You'll know the rules, the laws, and everything. And then you will practice it in Eretz Israel. So it's the physical and the spiritual.
It could be coming together. Okay. Two more comments, and I'll wrap it up. Zach.
I would like to bring up four plants that we're using during Sukkot, just to reinforce.
Okay.
A different stage of different section of Klal Israel. But important thing is that we only understand the whole mitzvah of shaking them when they fall together. I think
good.
The spiritual level, what he's talking about, and Rabbi, you and I we touched it, the differences between individual uprising spiritually. And nation uprising. This
right,
is
right.
Actually
good.
About
okay. Yeah. Eddie?
Could it be that the next stage could not be until the generation wiped out the mindset that we're enslaved and gone, the new generation was.
Could you guys wait a minute? Just wait 1 minute.
Could it be that generation that was slaves, their mindset had
right. Look, the generation, this generation did not get into Eretz Israel. So, yes. Yeah. So, it's interesting. I think that we have these ideas of spiritually climbing, and we have to do it in stages and not get frustrated, but keep working on it. It takes discipline and work. And also, the idea that there are certain things that we achieve as a nation, right? The first four we achieve as a nation. And there are certain aspects of spirituality that we could only achieve as individuals. Maybe that's also what the Netziv is saying. So I think there's a lot here to think about in terms of how we go about building our own spiritual life based on the model of how it was that God took B'nai Israel out of Egypt, ultimately to Har Sinai. All right, have a wonderful day.